dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. And right at the very forefront of that battle space is our friend Carolyn Glick. She is, among other things, a senior fellow with the David Horowitz Freedom Center and directs their Israel Security Project. She's also a senior adjunct fellow at the Center for Security Policy. And most importantly, she is the author of a brand spanking new book, indeed out today. Go get it, folks. The Israeli Solution, a one-state plan for peace in the Middle East. Carolyn Glick, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Congratulations. I couldn't be more pleased and happy to have you with us to talk about it.
Thanks so much for having me on your show, and thanks for your congratulations. It is indeed exciting.
It is indeed. Go buy the book, as they say. Carolyn, let's talk a little bit about the book and your plan in context. We've had the spectacle, I think that's the only way to describe it, of President Obama again attacking the Prime Minister of Israel, the elected Prime Minister of one of our most important, certainly most reliable allies in the world, as he was coming to Washington to meet with the President. This isn't the first time he's done it. He's done it at least one other time I can think of. But what do you make of what's going on here, and specifically what the President was pounding on Bibi Netanyahu to do?
It is exactly like you said. It's the second time that President Obama has ambushed Netanyahu, coming out with deeply hostile statements about American policy towards Israel while Netanyahu was on a plane on his way to Washington to meet with Obama. It's extraordinary the way that Obama thinks that he ought to be communicating messages to the United States' closest ally in the Middle East. And I think that what we see is a full-on government by the Obama administration to place all the blame for basically everything bad in the entire world, or at least the Middle East, on Israel.
Sounds like the UN, doesn't it?
Extraordinary thing. Well, you know what? A president who totally ignores what the American national interest is in every single thing and talks only about the international community, it would make sense that in relation to Israel, would as well as a member, not a leader, but as a member of the international community, he would attack the bogeyman of the UN in Europe, which is the Jewish state.
You know, one of the other things that's striking about this is even the Washington Post yesterday, not exactly a critic of the Obama administration by and large, described his foreign policy as kind of fantasy land. It's evident in this case. And it would be kind of funny if it weren't that the stakes are so high and the danger is so real. You've pointed out on this program and elsewhere many times that, you know, you want as a matter of policy to treat your friends better than you treat your enemies, or otherwise you're going to wind up with a lot more enemies than friends. And I can only say that the way this president has been treating Bibi Netanyahu, and it's not just the ambushes on his way here, his conduct in the White House on another occasion where Bibi was left to sort of fulminate while the president simply opted to go have dinner with his family in the most contemptuous and high-handed of ways, all suggests that it really is now, under the Obama administration, better to be an enemy of this country than its friend.
It is. And, you know, what my book does, The Israeli Solution, is it uses Obama's foreign policy, but not only his whole concept that the establishment of a Palestinian state west of the Jordan River on land that was historically given to the Jewish people as their sovereign territory has been the policy of American governments, bipartisan policy of American governments going back to the Nixon administration. And it's now reached sort of a climax with the Obama administration in terms of its insanity. and its counterproductiveness for American national security interests. But what I say in the book is, look, you know, this is wrong. It's based on correct view of reality on the ground by placing the blame on Israel for all the pathologies of the Islamic world and of the Arab world surrounding Israel. You're missing the whole point. You're missing actually what's happening on the ground and all of the problems that that inflict Israel's neighbors that are of their own making. And you try to put responsibility for a situation that is out of control on a country that is its primary victim and certainly not in any way, shape, or form its cause. And if you stop this, and if you abandon this narrative, which is completely false, of Israeli culpability for the problems in the wider Middle East, then you will have the basis for renewed foreign policy that can actually put the United States in a much safer place, restore its leadership of world affairs, at least insofar as the Middle East is concerned, because for the first time, the United States will be basing its Middle East policy on reality rather than on fantasy, which, as the Washington Post so rightly noted, is the basis of Obama's entire foreign policy, not only regarding the Middle East, but throughout the world.
Indeed. Carolyn Glick is our guest. She is the author of a brand new, marvelous book, The Israeli Solution, A One-State Plan for Peace in the Middle East. And Carolyn, you mentioned a moment ago that historically this land had been given to Israel. You mean not just by God, but even by the international community, which...
Yes, by the so-called international community, the family of nations.
The one that Obama is so fond of all the time.
Exactly. That same international community in 1922 gave sole sovereign rights, political rights over the territory west of the Jordan River that encompasses Israel and the West Bank and even Gaza to the Jewish people.
Right. And it should be thus, it seems to me, too. Carolyn, talk about the present plan that the president says Israel must accept or face demographic suicide, and how it contrasts with your own vision of a plan for peace that would be both more stable and certainly more consistent with our interests in the United States, as well as those of freedom-loving people in Israel and elsewhere.
The American policy today under Obama is trying to coerce Israel into accepting framework negotiations, which basically means Israel has to surrender up front a lot of things just to get the Palestinians to agree to meet with them and accept the surrender of Israeli rights on a lot of things. So they call it a framework for negotiations, but basically what it is a demand that Israel unilaterally surrender its sovereign rights to all areas of the West Bank, its right to self-defense by agreeing that in the long haul, remove its military forces from its eastern border along the Jordan Valley, and that it accepts culpability. It accepts its responsibility for the absence of peace in the Middle East. All of these things are being demanded by the Obama administration upfront from Israel, and they say this is a framework for future negotiations. So their idea is to pocket Israeli concessions and use that as a basis for trying to cajole the PLO into sitting down with Israel and signing a piece of paper that will say that they will live at peace with Israel, even though everybody knows that it's false. So that's a long way of saying that what the Americans are demanding, and they use fancy language like framework agreements to hide it, is they want Israel to surrender lock, stock, and barrel to the terrorists from the PLO, all of its national rights and its ability to defend itself for the long haul, and to do so in the name of peace. It is a very, very dangerous road the Americans want Israel to travel down.
It is indeed. And I think for the president to be glibly talking about it'll be suicidal if Israel doesn't take this step, it'll be homicidal if it does, because... And as you know, Carolyn, I was in Israel visiting with you a few months ago and had a chance to refresh the impression that I'd had in previous trips of how perilous Israel's situation is and how completely untenable it would be were the West Bank now, like Gaza, to be in the hands not just of the enemies who align themselves with the PLO, but with Hamas and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps and whoever else they bring in. this is the sort of thing that cries out for the clarity that you always bring to these issues at your column at the Jerusalem Post, Carolyn Glick, and now in your marvelous new book, The Israeli Solution, A One-State Plan for Peace in the Middle East. I pray that among others who will read this book, though I'm not holding my breath, will be Barack Obama, because he and John Kerry need to understand that there is an alternative to the homicidal approach that they are now proposing Israel take. Carolyn, God bless you. Thank you for the great work you do with us and with the Horowitz Freedom Center. Come back to us again very soon. And again, congratulations on your new book.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
On August 2nd, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors.
Dedicated to supporting the troops and their families.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star families. Retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.americanfreedomlawcenter.org.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Christian Whiten. You see him on Fox with considerable regularity, and I hope read his writings in numerous publications, all the right places, as they say. He is a principal at DC International Advisory these days, but previously was a senior advisor in the George W. Bush administration's State Department. He is the author of a new book entitled Smart Power: Between Diplomacy and War. And if ever there were a moment when smart power, or at least smart leadership, is needed, it is at the moment. Christian Whiten, welcome back. We're glad to have you with us.
Thanks, Frank. It's great to be here.
You've been doing a lot of thinking and writing and public commentary on Ukraine. Give us, Christian, a sense of, as you see it, what's animating Vladimir Putin's activities vis-a-vis the Ukraine, which have included some very overt threats of military action there.
You know, I think he is trying in many ways to reconstitute, if not the exact Soviet Union, something a bit like it. You know, this is a man who, as a colonel in the KGB, was deeply disappointed that the Soviet Union collapsed. He's referred to it as the greatest calamity in modern history, if you will. And he's someone who looks at what he terms his near abroad and sees these as countries that either should join Russia, or at least be dominated by Russia. That definitely includes Ukraine. I mean, he somewhat famously turned to George W. Bush at one point, this is Putin, and said that, you know, Ukraine isn't a real country. So he thinks these are places that really ought to be under domination. Belarus is another. Certainly Georgia is another. And so there's that factor going, trying to relive that past glory. But there's the other thing I'd say, and that this is classic behavior by a strongman or a dictator, because they lack legitimacy. They need nationalism, and they need reasons to justify their strong arm military rule. And so I think you're seeing that drove the level of violence he delivered in Chechnya. It drove what he did in annexing part of Georgia, and now, again, for not the first time, trying to dominate Ukraine.
We're visiting with Christian Whiten. He is the author, most recently, of Smart Power: Between Diplomacy and War. And Christian, speaking of smart power, he is clearly exercising one component of it, which is information dominance, at least within Russia, using the most crude propagandistic techniques to promote this notion that fascists are taking over in Ukraine and threatening the Russian population there. This is something that you've written about extensively over the years, that we ought to be exercising a degree of smart power in this space as well. Is there any evidence that we're doing that?
Certainly none that I've seen so far. I mean, basically what the Obama administration has deployed is rhetoric. It's not this sort of full cross-spectrum, John Kerry referred to an array of options, but then listed none of them. So is there a plan to free Central Europe from Russian energy? No. Is there a plan to make the oligarchs who keep Putin in power? No. Is there a plan to support dissidents across the board within Russia who can make life difficult for Putin? No. Is there a plan to bring down the ruble further? No. None of that sort of end-to-end statecraft is being deployed. Instead, what's being used is a lot of rhetoric. And rhetoric isn't nothing, but if you are a president who put down red lines in Syria and then ignored them and said we're going to get the people who killed our ambassador in Libya and then didn't, and if you got beat at the negotiating table by Iran, by Russia, by others, then, you know, rhetoric doesn't get you there.
It's rhetoric that seems mostly feckless in its content. But I just wonder, as you're talking about this, Christian Whiten, we have clearly multiple audiences for this rhetoric. And part of the target audience is presumably Vladimir Putin. The other part is the Ukrainian people. And I just wonder what you make of what John Kerry, the incumbent Secretary of State, and the president have been saying, communicating. Kerry's been in Kiev today. Is it convincingly expressing the solidarity that we ought to provide to pro-Western folks like those in Ukraine? Or is it more of the same towards, as for example, the Green Revolution in Iran, where we're basically giving them the back of the hand?
I don't think we are. You know, Kerry is out there, and the president, if you look at his remarks, seems mostly upset that Russia hasn't lived up to their vision for the 21st century world, the postmodern world, where we're all part of some international community. No one's ever found it, but we'll talk about it anyway. That's a lot different than saying saying, we are with you, which we never really said to the protesters in Ukraine who brought about this change of government that should have, that did or reorient, at least create the prospect of reorienting Ukraine more toward the West and doing what was intended in the original Orange Revolution back in 2004. You have none of that. It's just sort of more progressive talk, I would argue. And there are these threats. You know, John Kerry loves to get up and talk. He's, you know, very much a senator still, even a secretary of state. But I think if you're Putin and looking at this, or, you know, you talk about multiple audiences, if you're the Chinese or the Iranians, you're not that convinced by this.
Yeah, I'm not convinced at all. We're talking with Christian Whiten of DC Advisory LLC. And Christian, as you were describing the kinds of things that President Obama could be doing, isn't to this point, but could be doing on energy, by going after, you know, the legitimacy of the regime and its apparatus that supports it, the oligarchs and so on. This failure to stand with the folks who are in opposition to it, going after the ruble and the like. These are really very much the kinds of things that were part and parcel of the strategy that Ronald Reagan applied in taking down the first version of the Soviet Union that evidently Vladimir Putin seeks to rebuild. It was contained in a marvelous short but very powerful National Security Decision Directive, number 75. And I wonder, as you look at today's environment, is really what you're calling for a sort of return to a similar kind of strategy to prevent, at least to constrain and hopefully undo, the ambitions Putin has for a Soviet Union 2.0?
Yep, I think that's exactly right. And if you look back at Reagan, it was you know, a desire to get Western Europe off of Russian energy. Part of that was dealing with the Saudis. Part of it was North Sea oil, which the Brits and the Norwegians were pursuing at the time. It hadn't come online, but was going to. Today, it really comes down to fracking and natural gas. If you look at Ukraine, 70% of its natural gas, on which it's fairly heavily reliant, comes from Russia, comes from pipelines. And the same is true to varying degrees in Poland and Czech Republic, also even Britain and France, and this is what gives Putin tremendous political leverage and also gives him a lot of money. There's the beginnings of a network, an energy network that's independent of Russia. The Poles have been building a LNG, a liquefied natural gas receiving facility in Swinoujscie, which is on their extreme northwest corner, and that'll be able to receive tankers, whether they come from the Middle East or, better yet, actually from the United States. The Polish foreign minister, Radek Sikorski, was in Washington and said, you know, we should get American gas too. And so what the prospect is not only undermining Putin, but taking money from him and leaving it here in North America. So that's not going to work overnight. This will take some time, some resilience, and some actual actions, loan guarantees and things like that. But I'd argue those resources are better used on things like this than, for example, giving money to people who hate us in Pakistan.
And we are certainly looking at circumstances in which this energy bounty could be exported in part and help our own economy, as well as provide support to those, as you say, who are, you know, in need of protection against the kind of economic warfare, the smart power, if you will, that Putin has demonstrated he's capable of engaging in on their side. The other piece of it, of course, too, Christian Whiten, is using fracking technology to enable countries like these to gain access to some of their own reserves of gas or oil or both. And it really seems to me these are the kinds of things we ought to be very much about if we're thinking strategically about the sorts of challenges that Vladimir Putin and his agenda represent. Christian, we have to leave it at there, I'm afraid. Thank you very much, as always, for the great work that you do at DC Advisory and Fox News and elsewhere for your visits with us. Come back to us again very soon, if you would. Next up, we'll be talking with Dr. Zudi Jasser about the Muslim Brotherhood's operations in this country, what it's doing to his community, the Muslim American community, and to our security.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights at 6, after Michael Medved at 3, on 1260 WRC, New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Russia's threat to a pro-Western Ukraine is causing the greatest geostrategic crisis in Europe in a generation. It's a bad time for President Obama to be fomenting another one in the Middle East. Mr. Obama used a recent interview to assert that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu must allow the creation of a Palestinian state or invite a demographic crisis that will imperil the Jewish state. We can only hope that Bibi Netanyahu will reject such demeaning and coercive pressure. It can only encourage further intransigence on the part of Palestinians, whose virulent hostility towards Israel would make any new state they run a mortal threat to the Jewish state and to U.S. interests in the region. Treating friends worse than enemies is a formula for having fewer friends and more enemies. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're joined by a man I've come to admire tremendously, one of the most courageous and visionary figures in the Muslim American community, particularly when it comes to understanding the threat that emanates from some, not all by any means, but some members of that community, and a man who has actually worked strenuously to try to counter it on behalf both of his own religious community and the rest of us as well. He is Dr. Zudi Jasser. He is the founder and president of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy. He is also a leader of the American Islamic Leadership Coalition and a practicing medical doctor in Arizona, but also a Navy veteran and a man that, as I say, it has been a privilege to know and work with for me for quite some time now. Zudi Jasser, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us.
Frank, it's always great to be with you. Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
I want to start, Zudi, with kind of a what they would call in the military a situation report. Your assessment from inside the Muslim American community about the status of the Muslim Brotherhood in that community, the infrastructure that it has built, the kind of influence that it is trying to exercise on Muslims. What's happening on all of that, especially at a moment when in Egypt the organization is being branded as a terrorist organization and being rolled up?
Yeah, I can tell you, Frank, that they have never been more unleashed than they have in 2013 and 2014. Basically, with the Obama administration, they feel like there is no holds bar on what they can do. It is no longer an issue of subversive activity. They've gone beyond now into open, just feeling that they can represent the Muslim community, and those who don't toe the line are basically branded as non-Muslim, anti-Muslim, Islamophobes, including myself and many of the Muslims that work with us. And, you know, that behavior is coming as a result of large governments like Qatar buying satellite networks and having Al Jazeera America pipe into American living rooms and all of their ideology, and individuals like Wajhat Ali and many of the Islamists are now having their own television programs. And the State Department, you find them towing the line of the Islamists, whether it be in Egypt or in Syria or elsewhere. So basically, you find that a confluence of the agenda of the American Muslim Brotherhood legacy groups and the State Department and White House, which is very depressing. But on the other hand, you find in the Middle East almost a converse, which is the Brotherhood is suffering huge losses as a result of the population. Like in Egypt, you found millions rise up against the Brotherhood. So you find basically America being somewhat lost from the reality on the ground in the Middle East, where Muslims that have been subjected to theocrats are pushing back, while in America we're sort of in this cocoon where the Islamists have all the money, have all the influence and the governmental positioning, so it's marginalizing the rest of us.
Zudi, as you know, one of the things that the Muslim Brotherhood has been determined by the federal government in the Holy Land Foundation trial to be engaged in inside the United States is something it calls civilization jihad, by which it means basically a subversive sort of fifth column operation to, quote, destroy Western civilization from within, unquote. And I just wonder, as you look at the infrastructure of this brotherhood, notably organizations like the Islamic Society of North America and the Council on American Islamic Relations and the Muslim Public Affairs Council and the like, what do you think the rest of us should be concerned about in terms of their efforts to both burrow in and subvert such government and civil society institutions from within, given that that is their doctrine?
I think once Americans, Frank, understand what their mission is in the West, then it should concern us as to how that is affecting what would be rational American foreign policy abroad in regards to the Arab awakening and currently what's becoming the Islamist winter. So as a result, the Islamist organizations, whether it be CARE or the Islamic Society of North America, their goal, you know, they're simply, Muslims are 1-2% of the population. They're not going to take over America. But what they are going to do is bury themselves into positions of influence so that America's forward response in Saudi Arabia and Syria and Egypt and Pakistan and in those 56 countries with Muslim majorities is no longer one of advancing liberalism and freedom and the separation of mosque and state and true republics based in freedom and liberty, but rather allowing the ascension of Islamism and the neo-caliphate and basically endorsing the projects of the Organization of the Islamic Cooperation. So on the one hand, they want to influence American foreign policy abroad, and on the second hand, they want to separate Muslims out of our population in America so that they can implement Sharia and ghettoization projects and also then prevent us moderate liberal Muslims from having an influence, because once we become Americanized and believe in liberty, we can no longer be agents of their advancement of political Islam, and thus we're able to truly advance liberty abroad and use the power of America to defeat Islamism domestically and abroad.
You've touched on such an important point, Zudi, and that is the extent to which people like yourself, practicing devout Muslims, but people who love this country, who have served in its armed forces and who abide by and have sworn yourself to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, you represent a mortal peril to the Brotherhood. Talk a little bit about what, as a result, the Brotherhood has tried to do to silence you and people like you. I'm thinking notably, but not certainly exclusively, of your appearance on Fox and Friends recently to talk about what I consider to be another example of the Obama administration's efforts to submit to this Islamist agenda, notably by allowing beards to be worn by the United States military.
Yeah, it's amazing how they will find any topic in order to twist and then label and brand, especially our organization and myself, as being anti-Muslim or Islamophobic, because they truly are dealing in defamation, because they don't want us to have the mantle of Islam or Muslims. And if you look at the so-called 37 organizations they've labeled as Islamophobic in their report, the Council on American Islamic Relations that came out, they spend most of their time attacking me and attacking Muslims, because we are the only threat to take away their ownership of what is Islam and what is Muslims, and we're at the head of the spear, because otherwise this civilizational conflict between Islam and the West will come to fruition. That's what they want. But if we can prove that Muslim identity is compatible with being American and being in the American military and not expecting special privileges and expecting the Islamist agenda, then their entire operation falls apart, and we basically, as the Trojan horse within the Muslim community, will defeat them and allow the advancement of why many of us, our families, came here. And that's why they've refused open debates. Right now, we just sent the Council on American Islamic Relations a letter basically asking them to debate us publicly in a Lincoln Douglas debate, but they don't want that. They'd rather defame us and spread false information about what I actually said. And I've been long a defender of rights for Muslims in the military, but not special rights and not changing our uniform regulations or unit cohesion, which is really what the Islamists want.
Right. Well, and beyond all of that, as you know, Zudi Jasser, you put beards on and your gas mask is not going to fit properly, and that could be a real problem for you and for your unit. Listen, I just want to say how much, again, Dr. Zudi Jasser, the president and founder of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, how much I appreciate your leadership and courage, because you're absolutely right. Without the authority that they claim to be the leaders of the Muslim American community, these organizations, these Muslim Brotherhood fronts and their subversive operatives, I think cannot possibly succeed in our country. And Zudi, we've got less than a minute. Just very quickly, one of the things that has been done that I think was most commendable was your appointment, I believe, by Senator Mitch McConnell to the U.S. International Religious Freedom Commission. The efforts to marginalize you by the Obama administration, and before that, I'm afraid the Bush administration for that matter, seem to me to be the kinds of things we ought to be stopping in favor of this sort of recognition by the commission. Very quickly, can you just say what it means to you to be recognized as a leader, as you should be, of the Muslim American community?
Well, I think it's very interesting. People should take note that when the care organizations and Muslim Brotherhood groups attack me, that it's mainly my position onto that commission that they want to stop. And why? Because they're agents of the OIC countries, and this commission allows us to protect not only the freedoms of minorities abroad in countries like Saudi Arabia and Egypt, but the protections of moderate Muslims that need countries that advance liberty and protect dissident voices. And that's what my position means. It allows us to advance the ideas of liberty and freedom, which are always the canary in the coal mine of countries that will either succeed or will fail without those protections.
Amen. Zudi Jasser, we appreciate your leadership in this and so many other areas. Keep up the great work at the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, and come back to us again very soon. Next up, Andy McCarthy joins us. We'll get his take on some of these same issues and more. Straight ahead.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around.
And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. One of the high points of our week is the chance to visit with our next guest. He is Andy McCarthy, former federal prosecutor turned pundit par excellence at National View and PJ Media. You also see him at Fox, and his writings appear elsewhere, notably in book-length form. Bestsellers all, the most recent one being Spring Fever, The Illusion of Islamic Democracy. Andy, welcome back.
Frank, good to be here.
We were just visiting with Dr. Zudi Jasser, a man I know you have encountered and worked with over the years. And I was very interested and impressed by the point that he made that the practice of the United States government of legitimating and embracing and empowering and otherwise enabling the Muslim Brotherhood front organizations in this country notably outfits like the Islamic Society of North America and the Council on American Islamic Relations, is really a handicap for Muslims like him who actually are committed to this country, not trying to destroy it from within. You've studied deeply on the Brotherhood and its operations. Talk a little bit about the plight of individuals like Zuhdi Jasser and the importance of building them up, not undermining them in this kind of environment we're in.
I can't think of anything more important to take more note of, Frank, than Zuhdi's point. I think we see the flip side of it, that is the foreign policy side of it, a great deal. You know, the fact that the administration worked so energetically to empower the Muslim Brotherhood was not just a bad thing in terms of facilitating the activities of an outfit that is really hostile to American interest, but the ramifications of it is that it really suffocates and demoralizes pro-American Muslims and pro-Western Muslims and pro-democracy Muslims around the world. And if your objective is actually to promote friends of democracy as opposed to syncretism of Islamic or Sharia democracy that they want to promote.
One man, one vote, one time, basically.
Right, right. If you want to have real democracy, you have to really know who your friends are. And that's not any less true here than it is overseas. In fact, here I think it's an even bigger problem because not only is the administration not listening and taking note of people like Zuhdi, my sense over the years was that, and I'm going back to my experience as a prosecutor investigating national security cases, my sense was that the West has a lot more support in the rank-and-file members of the American Muslim community, which would be most American Muslims, than in the leadership of the mosques and the Islamic community centers, which tend to be to have more connections with foreign elements, including the Muslim Brotherhood. So I would suspect that someone with Zuhdi's patriotic sensibilities has a much bigger following in the Muslim community than in the American Muslim community than would be suggested by the fact that the administration doesn't even want to acknowledge that he exists. And that's really tragic when you think that people like Al-Amoudi and Sami Al-Arian, who are actual terrorists, had basically a red carpet open door to the American government for years.
Yeah, under successive administrations of both parties. Andy, two things you said are really noteworthy there, I think. One is that we are witnessing people like Zuhdi Jasser being kind of blacklisted. I note that you were among those who signed a letter indicating how this was done at a critical moment by Suhail Khan, a man brought in from the Muslim American community to be kind of the gatekeeper in the Bush White House, at the 9/11 moment when it was absolutely imperative that the President of the United States get the best advice from Muslims who are authentically pro-American like Zuhdi Jasser and not from the Muslim Brothers he wound up having around him during that very formative period in our post-attack policy shaping. And the other thing is that this is very much a dynamic situation, of course, that while I think you're probably right, most Muslims in this country line up, in favor of the land that they've adopted and gives them such opportunities. But the Brotherhood is clearly making a very concerted effort to dominate them and has the resources and this legitimation that they're given by the government only can enable that.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely right. I mean, look, if the government is going to reach out to and partner. I mean, here's what you want to do. You want to do outreach. They decide they're going to partner an outreach to the Islamists whose message is that the United States is a failed country for a variety of reasons, an enemy country if you listen to them talk among themselves. If the signal that the government sends is going to be that these are the Muslims that we want to take seriously, what kind of message does that convey to Muslims who are on the fence about which way to go? It basically reinforces what the Islamist case is against the United States. And here you have people like Zuhdi who are there to make a powerful counter case, but you know, if their version of events never sees the light of day, you really have a rigged fact-finding, if you will, for young Muslims.
One of the other points that he made, which we don't have time to really go into, but I know you're very concerned about, as am I, Andy, is the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and what it is trying to do to suppress this sort of alternative approach to Islam, the non-Sharia adherent Islamist approach. And I think this is another organization that needs to be closely scrutinized. We'll be talking about this at a program, in fact, on Thursday at the Westin Hotel. We're calling the National Security Action Summit. If people are interested in more information on that, they can go to homelandthreats.com and register. Andy McCarthy, in the closing minutes we have, just quickly, what is your sense of what's going on in Ukraine at the moment and Russia's designs there and perhaps beyond, and what we should be doing about it?
Well, I think, Frank, that obviously the Russians are playing power politics, and they understand that they have a weakling in the White House. So, you know, when that signal gets conveyed, then all bets are off. And as we've always said, the rogue actors are encouraged to be rogues. They don't rein in their routine as much as we'd like to think so, because you know, we look in through their eyes into their soul and you know, see that they've suddenly changed their ways. They rein in their routines because they think that there'll be decisive American action if they don't. And when they're pretty confident there won't be, then
Katie bar the door, as they say.
Right, exactly. But I think also, you know, to be fair to President Obama, some of this is the result of policies that were adopted even before he got in. That were foolish. I mean, this whole idea of Russia as a strategic partner of the United States, which was a big slogan of the Bush State Department, has always been it was preposterous then. It's not any less preposterous now. And the other thing is, you know, people like Caroline Glick and I, and you know, and you perhaps, and a few hardy others. Made the point when the Bush administration really sort of turned its back on the bedrock principles of the international system and endorsed Kosovo, a breakaway Muslim province, to have basically its own country. And if you recall at the time, Putin was ballistic about that. Because Russia always has its own, you know, problems with restive ethnic minorities that wanted to break away, and he warned back at the time that, you know, look, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and he's been acting on it ever since.
Andy, we've got to let you go. It's painful to do, but thank you very much as always for your time. It's great to have a chance to visit with you, and we look forward to doing so again next week. We look forward to talking with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Afton. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Thank you.